Okay, I'm Kara Buick, and I'm with Mary Messerschmidt. It's May 29th, 2004, in San Antonio at the Army Nurse Corps Association Convention. So we'll just start with, you know, where you grew up, where you were born and raised.
Okay. Well, I was born and pretty much raised in Ohio, in southeastern Ohio, mm-hmm. A long time ago. And my dad kind of had the travelitis, and uh-huh. so we moved to Florida when I was four, and World War II started, and as they were bombing ships and things in the harbor and missed and caused a lot of excitement in the city.
Uh-huh. And which city
we
was
moved
that?
Back. It was in Clearwater,
okay.
Florida, and uh-huh. You could actually see, and that's one thing I remember as a child, you could actually see the ships firing at each other uh-huh. out there. And you had to drive with lights off and everything. And so my dad, who was 4F, once they hit that harbor and the whole town shook, we came back to Ohio. So we did not stay down there. I don't even think we were there a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved. I think when I joined the service in 1964 and had to fill out the forms, I had already lived in 37 places. And they wanted to know everything about, I had no idea where most of them were.
Uh-huh.
So,
and your dad just liked to move around a lot?
The grass was always greener on the other side, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So travel was, moving was not a new to me
mm-hmm.
When I came into the Army.
Uh-huh.
But decided at a young age I was going to be a school teacher. And I have an aunt that I was named for. I was called Mary Lou growing up, and
uh-huh.
still am at home.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like her. Her name was Mary Louise Messerschmidt also,
uh-huh.
Before she was married. I didn't care for her. So my mother had been in nursing school before World War II, and didn't finish. She got mad at them because they made everybody stay in, and she had a date, and so she left 3 months before she graduated.
Uh-huh.
But she did work as a nurse for years and years and years till they got strict about registration.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of liked the hospital environment, so in grade school I decided I'm going to be a nurse. I am not going to be a school teacher.
Uh-huh.
Not if I have to be like my Aunt Mary.
And
from that point on, that's what I wanted to do and what I did. And she tried to talk me, you know, she didn't try to talk me out of it. She said, if you're going to commit to this, you've got to commit all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to nursing school in Zanesville, Ohio, and a 3-year diploma program.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finished, didn't know much about degree programs. That wasn't talked about very much. But decided I wanted my degree because they had asked me to teach and I didn't have a degree, and I thought you should have a degree to teach.
Uh-huh.
And so I did do some clinical teaching, but then decided to go to college. Took a couple of courses at Ohio University, had a little campus there.
Uh-huh.
And so went to Cleveland, went to Western Reserve when it was Western Reserve instead of Case Western,
mm-hmm.
and got my bachelor's. And while I was there, I decided to, a friend and I saw a sign in the nursing office at the university that said they needed Army nurses. And this was really a surprise. This was in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been 1963.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know they had nurses in peacetime in the Army.
Uh-huh.
How would I know? I mean, I wasn't in a military family then or anything, you
uh-huh.
know. And so on the weekend, we went down to Cambridge, Ohio, my home, and said, the recruiter came in on Saturdays to the post office, so we both went up to the post office and said, do they take Army nurses into the Army?
Uh-huh.
He was he was a sergeant. He
uh-huh.
said, I get double points for this. So by Monday, this was Saturday, by Monday when I was back up at school, the recruiter was calling.
Uh-huh.
I said, my, they are fast.
Uh-huh.
It must be an efficient organization. So I got to join, we both joined as first lieutenants, under 2 years in for pay purposes, and they let me finish that year of school. So when I actually went to basic, I had my bachelor's in science, bachelor of science in nursing, and they paid me for a whole year, first lieutenant, under two, full quarters, all of that. We call that kind of bootstrap. It wasn't the traditional degree completion, but they just kind of let you go to school because they were short of nurses. Vietnam was building up, and I went out and bought a new Mustang. Mustangs were brand new on the market, and gee, I was getting all this money now. So I went out and bought a brand new, the bank and I bought a brand new Mustang, 1964 and a half Mustang. I hated it. Look at the basic, hated it. It didn't have air conditioning in San Antonio in the summertime. And so I got rid of it as fast as I could, but I wish I had it back. it'd be worth a lot of money today. I mean, they made it easy for me to come in and to finish my degree and pay me every month. And I took a cut in pay. I was working part-time, but I took a cut in pay and didn't have to work during that year. And then they got, just several months after I had come in, they had a major pay raise in the military. And I went to basic in 1965 at Fort Sam Houston, and was one of the senior people, got to be a platoon leader in March. I had been in the band for 6 years in junior high and high school, so I knew how to march. And it was, they just kind of made it easy to, to do these things. My first assignment was BAMC, Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio. It was much like civilian nursing, and I wasn't real tickled with some of the things that I saw, and I volunteered to leave. Vietnam was building up. Very rapidly. They were deploying nurses all the time. I was the third head nurse in 6 weeks, the third lieutenant head nurse. I had just was out of basic, and I had come in with 3 years experience in nursing and my degree. I asked to go, and sure enough, got to go to Japan with a unit, deployed with a unit, and we were among the first units to deploy by air. Up until about that time, they were deploying people by ship. And so we got to go, a general hospital, 1,000-bed general hospital, made three, must have been 707s at that point in time, three trips to Japan in a 707 with the oldest stewardess in the world. I guess for these special overseas flights, they had top priority went to the senior people. Of course, I was 26 or 7, and I thought they were 532 or something. But it was a real team-building effort. I had never run into this kind of thing before, because we went over as a unit, we unpacked cartons and cases and set up a 1,000-bed hospital, and within and we got there just immediately before Christmas of 1965. And kind of Christmas came, families weren't over yet. People, really, it was a team by this time. And our hospital didn't have any elevators, but it had three-story buildings, four separate three-story buildings, plus many other buildings around the area. It had been an R&R center during Korean War, I believe, and gosh, it was so nice, all these people working together, and I got picked fairly early. I was a head nurse on a unit, and I got picked fairly early by the chief nurse, because I had my degree, to be the training nurse, so I was still a first lieutenant, and then got promoted to captain, and I was supposed to get out of the Army, and I will tell you, there was an old sergeant, Sergeant Bell, who was the epitome of what you read about and hear about sergeants. He was an old black sergeant who did nothing, he expected his troops to do nothing that he didn't do. He was Johnny on the spot. He was there religiously to help take care of patients, to clean up the place, to do whatever. Mm-hmm. And one day, Sergeant Bell said to the lieutenant, because I was getting out of this chicken shit outfit as fast as I could, I would work hard, pay back my time, my 2 years for school, and I was leaving. Mm-hmm. He said, "You protest too much." I went off on him. I don't know what you're talking about. I wouldn't stay in this outfit if for all the tea in China. And it was about this time they had asked me to be a recruiter. Mm-hmm. And to go listen to this recruiter, because that would be a place I could be assigned to. And I said, "I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it." There were just things that I just didn't care for. Mm-hmm. And so while I was there, the chief nurse, Colonel Rita Geis, who's now dead, was just fantastic, very personable. People got to know you. Mm-hmm. You got to do varying things. And we said one day to her, this friend and I, what if we decided to go to school or something and stay in the Army? Well, she was excited. I had, while over there, had written to Ohio State and was accepted to the graduate program in nursing, and had my little letter, said, "You will be accepted," because I knew when I was getting out of the service in 67. Mm-hmm. And she's, geez, you know. So I wrote a letter to Career Activities, our assignment branch, and said, would they consider sending me to graduate school? And they wrote back, if I went regular Army, yes, they would consider sending me to graduate school. What is regular Army? You know, what do I know? And then they said, I went down, I talked to the chief nurse. Oh, she was excited. Mm-hmm. Sure, regular Army. The whole system of doing that was far different than it is today. And so I wrote back, probably in pencil, or pen, maybe in pen, but handwritten. Well, if I decided to go regular Army, and you didn't let me be in graduate school by such and such a time, and I was very generous, I gave him another 6 months, how would I get out of the Army because you violated my contract? Mm-hmm. Well, you will be in the graduate school no later than. And then, in the meantime, they sent a letter almost right away that said, how would you like to go to the Army Baylor program? I said, what's the Army Baylor program? And it was a graduate program in hospital administration. Now, the thing as a young nurse that surprised me is I said, you mean that administrators go to school? They act kind of dumb. I didn't know they ever went to school. This is the perspective of a young nurse on a ward, you know. Uh-huh. And they were all excited. The chief nurse, the executive, everybody was really excited that I had been made this offer. And I was the first Army nurse to get to go to this program. It's an Army Baylor. It's held here in San Antonio. As a company grade, as a captain. Mm-hmm. They'd always waited till they were at least majors or so, and they said, maybe we've been waiting too long, we should send people younger. And so then they topped it off by saying I could come back early to the States from Japan. It was either that or I was going to get out, or, you know. So, okay, and they brought me back. I did not go to the career course, which was then a six-month course for nursing and anybody else, to learn more about the Army. They waived that and allowed me to go directly to this Baylor program. It was going to be, I was going to come home, go to the career course, work a few months, and then start the program, the Baylor program, the following year. But they brought me back in 67. I didn't go to the career course, and they started me right away in this graduate program. Mm-hmm. And there were 5 nurses in the program. There were a total of 60 people. There were a couple of docs, a dietitian, a physical therapist. The rest were all Medical Service Corps officers. And it was just an excellent year of learning and doing and seeing about how hospitals work. I saw my first big computer system at the USAA, which is an insurance company that caters to the military. Had this fairly large building. They now have acres and acres, but mm-hmm. at that time they had this huge building, and almost one whole floor was nothing but computers. It was in the old day with the big tapes and everything. Uh-huh. Well, I was impressed. I had never seen anything like that before. And we went on then to, I did a residency in hospital administration. It's a 2-year program. You do the didactic year here in San Antonio, and then you go off. You had to do a thesis, and I think they call it something else now, but I got to do my thesis on distribution systems in central materiel, where they have supplies for patients and the mm-hmm. equipment and stuff, where they mm-hmm. sterilize things. And I went to the University of Kansas in Kansas City, Missouri, is mm-hmm. where it was. University of Missouri in Kansas, whatever one it was up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a week up there gathering data, mm-hmm. and another week back doing reviews and things later. And the Army allowed the students to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it based on administrators sending in problems that they wanted a student to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
So they were real life problems that mm-hmm. they had. And they really published this mm-hmm. this data. It's a hardbound. It's found in the library here on post. I don't think anybody else has it. But many years after that, and I didn't ask permission from anybody to quote anything or do anything in this, but there's a book published, and I didn't even forget the name of it, that my thesis was quoted in.
Uh-huh.
I said, oh my heavens, I'll probably go to jail. And years later, a hospital administration book of some kind.
Uh-huh.
I said, wow. And following the year at Fitzsimmons in Denver, Colorado, I went to Vietnam. I volunteered to go to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I thought Vietnam would be long over before, you know, none of us thought a war would go on that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assigned to the 91st Evac Hospital in Chu Lai, Vietnam. It had changed hands. I think it started out as a Marine hospital or Navy hospital or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the 91st itself had moved around the country, but it was, at that time, it was right on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't real nice, but it was right on the ocean. And I was there, actually I was only there for 10 months. I was credited with a full year tour. Almost exactly to the day of 10 months, my mother died suddenly. Mm-hmm. And so when I went home on emergency leave, I didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have to come back. They said, you've completed a tour and you can stay in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Now I will tell you, during this whole time, people would say to you, well, the reason you don't have any help to take care of patients is because they're all in Vietnam. But when you got to Vietnam, you said, where's the help? Well, they're all in the States. Somewhere along the line, you have to do more with less.
Uh-huh.
That was the philosophy. Uh-huh. So while I was in Vietnam, I had volunteered to extend for a year in Vietnam. Because early in my time there, they ask you where you want to go afterwards. And my parents were on the East Coast. And so I thought, and they were in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And about the closest I could get, I could get to Kentucky, but was the Washington, D.C. area. And I thought that'd be a neat place to live for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I put down that I'd like to go to Fort Belvoir in Virginia, Fort Meade in Maryland, or Walter Reed, so Belvoir, Meade, or Walter Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they wouldn't send me to the medical center because I had been at one medical center, and then I had been at a large hospital, 1,000-bed hospital. So I figured they'd want me to go to a community hospital just for my mm-hmm. education.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, I got orders for Walter Reed, of course. And so I tried to get out of that had already extended, and they turned it down, said I had to go. Then when my mother died, I came back, of course, a few months early, mm-hmm. earlier than planned. I will tell you that my tour, which seemed to last for a lifetime at Walter Reed, Walter Reed's the best hospital in the United States military, as far as I'm concerned, and certainly in the Army. I had been ICU nurse in Vietnam, and when I went to Walter Reed, I was treated, because I didn't have a sponsor or anything, because they didn't know I was coming yet, mm-hmm. you know, I was there early. The chief nurse took me all around the area the day I got in, and she allowed me to go to dinner that night with she and the assistant chief, whose birthday it was. And she picked me up, took me everywhere, and the next morning picked me up again and took me everywhere. I was impressed. I had never, and most of the chief nurse's office up to that time had been in little closets, little small rooms and things. This lady, this big area, and I was impressed. And I went to ICU and recovery room at Walter Reed and was there for a couple of years. Got to be the head nurse very shortly after I got there. Went on evenings and night after I said, please help, help, I need a rest. They let me do evenings and nights for a while. And I, at that point in 70, this was 72, the end of 72, then General Dunlap had just been promoted. She'd been a chief nurse there for just a few months and got picked up for general. And she came up to me one day and said, how would you like to go to the U.S. Army Data Systems Agency? It's in Frederick, Maryland. I said, what is that? And she said, well, they're putting a team together of nurses and doctors and computer people, and they want to start looking at automation for patient care. Well, now my experience with automation so far was visiting that USAA building, right? She said, we've never done this before, and this could be a career field. She said, I see this as something that's really going to grow. So I was assigned to the Data Systems Agency in Frederick, Maryland, which was not too far. I drove every day, 60 miles or that's about 30 miles up. And it was really kind of the beginning of looking at things. Very shortly, this team grew and grew because the Surgeon Generals had said, the Department of Defense chief had said, we're not going to have three different, the Army system, the Navy system, and the Air Force system. We're going to have a healthcare system of automation. One of the, I've been in the Army now close to 10 years, and so, and I was a major, and I thought, as a group of nurses and doctors and healthcare people and data systems people and logistics people, the whole team was kind of represented in this group that became known as the Tri-Service Medical Information System. And I was there when we helped pick the name. I was the first nurse assigned, and then we had a couple of other nurses that joined us, and it's still going on. It's called the something else now. It's not TRIMIS anymore, but it's another DMIS, Defense Information Management System. And this was in 72, the end of 72, starting in 73. As a part of this job, we decided we did not want to automate what we had. We wanted to modernize how we delivered care and automate that. We probably didn't realize what we were undertaking. You know, that's, but for the first time ever, here are doctors and nurses with a real patient not involved. You don't have to be concerned you're going to hurt somebody. We could sit down and fight and argue and agree or disagree without hurting anybody. And we came up with a concept. A nurse researcher had said to me, what kind of nursing are you going to automate? And I said, I shook my shoulders and said, what kind of nursing? And she said, well, yes, what kind of nursing? Are you going to do functional nursing? Are you going to do team nursing? What are you going to do? I said, we do functional nursing in the military and did at that time. She said, well, you can't do that. Come and visit with me. Now, she was an active duty lieutenant colonel, research doctoral person, and she had been hired by the civilian community to do, to introduce something called primary care nursing at Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I said, primary care nursing? And so she asked me to come with her one day when she was giving a lecture and things at that hospital. And geez, I was impressed. It was sort of a nurse being responsible, and there's a lot of variations on this, being responsible for a patient from the time, not for its minute-to-minute care, mm-hmm. but for the plan of that care and for the execution of that care from the time they're admitted to the hospital until they're discharged. Mm-hmm. At least till they're discharged, and maybe following them into the community, but at least in our concept, from admission to discharge, somebody, single person, would be following that person. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounded impressive, mm-hmm. but I thought, I don't know. But she helped me write up a little thing to present to the chief nurse at Walter Reed, mm-hmm. who became a corps chief shortly thereafter, who said, well, it looks like something that we used to do 100 years ago, and I don't think so. She had a doctoral person just finishing school who was going to come and work for her, and I had to wait till that person came. Mm-hmm. And we argued and fought and had a group and even went to places on our own, at our own expense on weekends, to work with a group from Augusta, Georgia. Colonel Sue Frazier was the chief nurse down there, to come up with some kind of concept that wasn't the functional nursing concept, that was more modern. And all the time I'm working with the automation group. Mm-hmm. As a result, we also got to travel, our team, our TriMas team, mm-hmm. got to travel throughout the country, mm-hmm. going to places that had automated systems, clinical automated systems, and there weren't too many at that point in time, but there were some. Mm-hmm. Also, different forms of nursing, like primary nursing, team nursing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it might be one of the best things that ever happened to me, because at 10 years you get a little restless, and gee, maybe the grass is greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. And I got to go out and see what people were doing firsthand, and not just one place or two, but many places throughout the time I was assigned to this group. Mm-hmm. I also worked in the hospital on weekends and things, and we started a modeling effort in at Walter Reed, and we started it on one ward with the docs involved, the nurses involved, the dietitian, the pharmacist, mm-hmm. everybody involved in trying to modernize how we were giving care. Mm-hmm. And it was just a fantastic experience. And I really watched a unit that gave deplorable care, absolutely rotten care at Walter Reed, mm-hmm. blossom under this concept when we moved it. Mm-hmm. And one nurse that I would have fired had I had the option, mm-hmm. as a young major, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I would have fired her long ago. I thought she was terrible. She blossomed. She was an older woman, mm-hmm. but she blossomed with the attention she got and with what she was doing and the accolade she received, mm-hmm. from what she was doing. So I was a strong, firm believer, mm-hmm. in changing how we did business. Mm-hmm. From 70 to 78, I was assigned to Walter Reed and to this TriMas thing. And sort of later on, the nurse that had come to be the project for the chief nurse, mm-hmm. Was moved to become a chief nurse somewhere, and I got to take her place over at the hospital. But I still had this close connection, mm-hmm. with the TriMas group and with the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I worked directly for the deputy commander, a one-star general, mm-hmm. and got to continue doing, getting ready to move into the new hospital. So unit management was introduced, unit dose pharmacy was introduced, and I got to oversee, mm-hmm. Much of this stuff. And so I was selected then to go to, I was promoted then to lieutenant, had a secondary promotion to lieutenant colonel, so I got promoted ahead of my peers, mm-hmm. To lieutenant colonel. And in 78, was selected to go in residence to the Command and General Staff College at Leavenworth, mm-hmm. which is a tactical orientation. You'll learn about fighting and all of that. I knew nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be the best year of my life. I kind of doubt that, but it was an interesting year, and I met. There were 900 students at this program. There were 5 women.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all kinds of students, you know, all fields, a lot of line officers, a few medical type people, nursing, MSCs, mm-hmm. doctors, very few of us. But I got to be a leader at that of a unit, mm-hmm. A group of about 60 at that level too, and nursing hadn't been allowed to do that, although one of our former chiefs, General Slowitzky, had been the whole class leader when mm-hmm. she had been there, and then they had stopped it, and they weren't letting other, they thought this was for line officers to be in charge, not for other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked out. It was a good year. I enjoyed almost all of it, except mm-hmm. all those maps everywhere. And from there, I went to Europe as an assistant chief nurse in Frankfurt,
mm-hmm.
and worked under who became General Adam Zender, and got promoted again, secondary zone, to colonel
mm-hmm.
right before I left there, and got my first chief nursing job at Nuremberg Hospital in Nuremberg, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And had decided there were two jobs that I think are great as a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
One is a head nurse and one is a chief nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Those two jobs I really liked. When I finished at Nuremberg, I split my 3 years over there between Frankfurt and Nuremberg. I went back to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and I arrived at Fort Campbell the day that they dedicated a brand new hospital
mm-hmm.
Called Blanchfield Army Community Hospital. And Colonel Blanchfield was the chief of the Corps during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And during her tenure, they went from just a couple of thousand nurses to mm-hmm. 50,000 nurses.
Mm-hmm.
I had also taken care of this woman as a patient when I had been on ICU at Walter Reed in 71.
Mm-hmm.
And she died in that year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first fixed kind of facility, large facility, that they had ever named for an Army nurse. So the day I signed in, they had this huge dedication ceremony, and the Surgeon General and all kinds of former Corps chiefs. I thought that was nice of them to have this party for me. And I spent 2 years there and was selected by General Slowitzky to go back to Europe, to 7th Medical Command, where I was able to be the chief nurse and consultant in nursing for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1984 that I went back, in August of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, they had 11 hospitals and 64 health clinics in Germany. We were trying to set up in case of another war, so we were setting up these fighting hospitals and pre-positioning them and getting stuff in. So I got to travel a lot in Germany just mm-hmm. in that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for 3 years and was allowed to come back to Walter Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came back to Walter Reed in 1987, in October of 87, became chief nurse. A friend of mine was the chief nurse at that time there, Jim Romeo. And I became the chief nurse at Walter Reed in June of 88, and stayed there until December of 92, when I had been selected by the then Corps Chief, General Adams,
mm-hmm.
to participate in what became known as Task Force Asclepius. It really was the worst year of my life. It could have been the best,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't. There was a lot of medical. We had two doctors, two MSCs, and then a smattering of other people in this team. So we were kind of outweighed in many things. the purpose of this group was to reorganize the Army Medical Department.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there had been some edicts handed down from Department of Defense and Department of the Army saying you got to modernize your structure and move some people out of Washington and things like that. So at the end of that, I had finished 30 years of active duty in January of 94,
mm-hmm.
and I went and I retired in February 1st
mm-hmm.
in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had also been to the War College. I was selected for the War College by Correspondence course, which is the Carlisle Barracks,
mm-hmm.
and it's the one school was tactical. This deals with philosophy and
mm-hmm.
Higher level things, and that's at Carlisle Barracks in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think back to this, I'm getting out of this outfit just as fast as I can, and it took me 30 years to do it. I thoroughly enjoyed almost every day that mm-hmm. I spent in the military,
mm-hmm.
and can hardly believe I spent 30 years in it.
Mm-hmm.
Can hardly believe I've been out for 10.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's just been a
mm-hmm.
a good ride. They may it's different. It is totally different being in the military than being in the civilian nursing.
Mm-hmm.
The camaraderie, the esprit. You don't see that in other. Other mm-hmm. situations very often. The magnet hospitals probably come a little closer,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think they would come close at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look at this group that's meeting down here after all these years, some of these people are in their 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't spend a career maybe in the military.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe were in just for a couple of years and got out.
Mm-hmm.
But something about the military.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some bad days, but for the most part, they've been.
Mm-hmm. And was it, I mean, did you have any idea about those sorts of things when you went to the recruiter? You know,
beginning?
No.
In fact, I was scared.
Uh-huh. So what was it that...
Well, I thought our perception, that my friend and I thought, you know, maybe it's like going to prison, but they're going to pay us some money to go to school, so maybe we could stand it for a couple of years, mm-hmm. you know.
Was that the... kind of the main motivational factor, I guess.
Money.
Was the money.
Money.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't duty and honor and country, though I had no problems with that.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it was money
mm-hmm.
was the reason I was joining. They were going to pay me to go to school instead of me working part-time and going to school. And I did not have to work full-time.
Uh-huh.
My parents were very generous. They allowed me to keep my car. They paid my insurance. They gave me spending money.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're 26 years old and you think you ought to be out on your own maybe by now,
mm-hmm.
and so why not? It's kind of a lark. Go try the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam, I don't know if I... As a matter of fact, there was a Vietnamese student, graduate student, that lived in the dorm where I... It's a graduate dorm. It wasn't mm-hmm. the traditional dorm.
Uh-huh.
But it was kind of off... It was on campus, off campus kind
yeah.
of thing, on a street. And we had to go to her and find out where is Vietnam. As it started building up,
mm-hmm.
I was there when President Kennedy was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And actually visiting in a nursing home as part of my nursing education in undergrad,
mm-hmm.
the day he was shot. And as we were walking around, we saw all these, we thought they were old, they probably were my age, I don't know, people sitting around these TVs, and they were all upset. Some of them were crying. We said, what's going on? They said, the president's been shot. We thought, yeah, right. I mean,
mm-hmm.
what do they know? They probably are senile, I don't know. And then all of us started, of course, watching as the story unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he had been shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was purely money.
Uh-huh. And then what made you stay in? You know, when you said in Japan you were real dissatisfied and wanted out.
Japan was the satisfying portion, the first real satisfying portion. The chief nurse was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They made it easy for me to go to graduate school. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd been out in the civilian world for a couple of years, and I knew that it cost money to go to school. I'd paid for some of my schooling. Uh-huh. And why didn't I go to Ohio State? That would have been cheaper, but I selected Western Reserve. It just was easy, mm-hmm. you know, to stay. Mm-hmm. And had I gotten married and had a family, maybe I would have gotten out. I don't know. I don't uh-huh. know. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I just liked it. I liked the jobs that I got. I was offered some opportunities that most of us don't get uh-huh. with the trimus experience and going out and seeing how the other half live. Most nurses never see something like that. Mm-hmm. Taking care of the soldier mm-hmm. was good, and I had one soldier. As a matter of fact, when I was in Frankfurt, which was a few years after I had been in Vietnam, I left Vietnam in 70, and this was 78, 79 probably. Mm-hmm. I was on the making rounds on the pediatric ward, and a mm-hmm. gentleman came up to me who had his son or daughter as mm-hmm. a pediatric patient, and he said, "I know you," mm-hmm. and I said, "Where?" Mm-hmm. He had been a sergeant in Vietnam and had a troop as a patient on ICU in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and I had been the nurse taking care of that patient, uh-huh. and that had been 8 years. Uh-huh. Now, granted, it's a little easier. I mean, there's many, many men there and not very many women, but still, he only saw me for a very short period of time. Uh-huh. But when he related the story, I knew exactly what patient it was.
Uh-huh. And were there things that made the Vietnam year different?
Well, my mother's death, of course. I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. And I had tried, when I found out that she had had a heart attack and was in the hospital, she was 59, mm-hmm. and that she was in the hospital, I went to the Red Cross and tried to call back, and they wouldn't let me. They said the doctor hadn't declared her critically ill. Mm-hmm. So the next words from the Red Cross were that she was dead. I never was too happy with the Red Cross from that point on, but, mm-hmm. You know, not all of them were bright, so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. what, taking care of patients in that situation, I mean, when I got to Walter Reed and I was again working on recovery ICU, mm-hmm. They would call for a bed from the recovery room to come and get a patient that was coming out of the operating room. Mm-hmm. And I took care of many of the same patients I had taken care of in Vietnam at Walter Reed. Mm-hmm. The names I remembered, or the faces I remembered, and one patient that I saw who had progressed some was a bilateral amputee who had been going to become an Olympic runner. Mm-hmm. And of course, when I saw them, they had no blood and they were, you know, quite ill in Vietnam. But he approached me in the dining room at Walter Reed one day mm-hmm. in a wheelchair. He was going to recreation or something. I mean, he had color in his cheeks and everything. I didn't recognize him. Uh-huh. And he recognized me uh-huh. as being his nurse in Vietnam. Uh-huh. So, you know, you made an impression on each other and certainly on patients. Mm-hmm. And we had Vietnamese patients as well, and my first experience there was taking care of Vietnamese prisoners of war, uh-huh. North Vietnamese and Viet Cong, uh-huh. as well as family members. We had one ward, and we had them separated by a little H bar mm-hmm. That had the bathrooms and things in it. Mm-hmm. The hospital I came from and the job I went into is where the nurse Sharon Lane was killed mm-hmm. by incoming. Mm-hmm. And she had been the head nurse like one before me, mm-hmm. Although the hospital had changed hands by then. A different group was there.
Uh-huh. And what did you think about treating the POWs and the VC and the
PDS? Well, they were patients, mm-hmm. and they were sick or wounded. There were MPs standing right there. I really didn't have a great, you had to be kind of humanistic about it. Mm-hmm. If there had been a problem that I had to make some choices. Now, I never had to make choices between American patients and Vietnamese patients, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the same thing is true in Iraqi mm-hmm. freedom right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because these patients were separated from American patients.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect had some, if you didn't just respond to something, you know, mm-hmm. just out of the blue, if you had a second to think about it, you would certainly try to save first mm-hmm. the civilians and certainly the children
mm-hmm.
Before you tried to save the prisoners,
mm-hmm.
except we didn't always know if they were truly prisoners. I mean, if they were really bad guys or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had been picked up as bad guys, but how do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, some of these prisoners of war were very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they must have been young teenagers, not 18 or 19, younger uh-huh. than. They weren't shaving or anything.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have any trouble taking care of them. Had I had to make a choice, then it would have been a little bit, not much. The Americans would have come first. The American or the Allied forces uh-huh. would have come first.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that we didn't have to make those choices.
Mm-hmm.
During that experience, the drug problem in America, this is in 1969-70,
mm-hmm.
was becoming very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And we even opened up a drug ward
mm-hmm.
because of the problems we were having
mm-hmm.
with people.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever have to work on that ward? Or?
Yes, I was one of the two people that opened it up.
Uh-huh.
And then I fortunately got off of it. That's not my deal. I'm not a psych nurse. I'm not a
uh-huh.
drug and alcohol nurse. I prefer med-surg, and actually uh-huh. I prefer intensive care,
uh-huh.
or did then.
Uh-huh. Mm. And what kinds of things did you do besides just your regular nursing? I mean, did you have time off, the day or in the evening, depending on when you worked, or did you?
Well, we worked at least 12 hour days, 6 days a week,
mm-hmm.
and you slept.
Mm-hmm.
The food was awful. The food, I lost probably 15 pounds there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they had salad, you know, lettuce and stuff. We didn't get it over there. Apparently it didn't grow over there. If it did, they'd put night soil on it, and you know what that is.
Mm.
Human excreta
mm-hmm.
to make it grow.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't get that. We had a lot of cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't look at coleslaw for several years after I left Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
The Vietnamese, when I got home, when they let me go, on emergency leave. I mean, they got me out of there very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when I got home, my unit, now that in today's army,
mm-hmm.
on the battlefield or in the field of theater,
mm-hmm.
They have cell phones and email and all mm-hmm. of this. We had one Red Cross phone that you could stand in line at for hours trying to make a call to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mail, U.S. mail,
mm-hmm.
that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And today they have, thank God for them. I
mm-hmm.
think it's so much better, so much healthier for
mm-hmm.
them to be able to communicate in some way
mm-hmm.
With their family and friends. But when I got home, the Army very nicely, I had a friend, the friend that I came into the Army with that had been a friend since nursing school,
mm-hmm.
and the Army allowed her to take emergency leave because she explained to them that I was an only child and there was nobody with my father.
Mm-hmm.
So they let her go back from Denver to Ohio
mm-hmm.
to be with my father till I got there from Vietnam, because there was a lapse in time before I could get
uh-huh.
there. And she and another friend of mine flew in from Denver, I guess. She was in Denver, too, at that time. And they were there when I got there. They
uh-huh.
were there with my father,
uh-huh.
who wouldn't do a thing until I got there. He didn't pick a casket or anything. And it took a couple of days, you know, for
yeah.
this to all unfold. It was they're undoing my suitcase, because all I had was what I threw in a suitcase.
Uh-huh.
And much of it had been washed in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
The odor when they unzipped that suitcase, everybody is going, oh. Because they would wash our clothes in a big tank. Everybody's clothes went into this big tank,
uh-huh.
you know, and Mama Sons would, oh, it was terrible. The odor was, the thing that's always missing in movies and everything is the odor.
Uh-huh.
It's like when I was assigned to Japan for those 2 years. One of the nurses that was assigned there at the same time, her mother had come to visit, and she had gone down to buy the daughter had gone down to buy some fish and brought it home, and her mother said, that is spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
She said, it smells just like it does over there. I don't know. They have these open fish markets, and so the smell of fresh fish is kind of mixed in with the odor of fish that's
uh-huh.
kind of old. So
uh-huh.
you never get the odors.
Yeah.
Maybe that's good. If they released that odor into the middle of a movie theater, I think it'd evacuate.
Uh-huh. Well, what did your family think about you going to Vietnam? Were they concerned? Or
well, first of all, remember that I was an only child.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am, 26 when I joined. So my dad, he never really ordered me or tried to order me around or anything. He probably thought it was impossible. But he had gone to the local truck stops in Cambridge, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And he would just talk to strangers as they'd drive in. What do you know about the Army? Because
mm-hmm.
He hadn't been in. Well, what about Army nursing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my sister was an Army nurse and she was great. Or I met my wife when she was an Army. Oh, you know, so it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that was a grand idea.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to Vietnam, I really didn't tell them that I volunteered to go.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't have had to go, obviously, as an only child and stuff. You know, they wouldn't force you to
uh-huh.
do that kind of thing. But I wanted to go. Being
uh-huh.
in the Army, that's why I came in,
uh-huh.
was to do something like that.
Uh-huh. And did you have an opinion on the war? I mean, this is after the big tits and...
I thought it was my duty to go over there and help take care of the troops. I was not anti-war or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, if the president said to do it, then that's probably what we're going to, president and Congress, that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to go over and take care of the troops.
Mm-hmm.
A friend that was over there, actually, she's attending this conference now. When she was there, she's from Michigan, Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there a couple years ahead of me. And here she was in Vietnam calling Detroit to find out if her family was okay
mm-hmm.
because of the riots.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, there's something wrong with this equation.
Uh-huh.
Now, in that day and age, you still didn't know where the front lines were.
Mm-hmm.
You thought you did, but the nurse that was killed right there when an incoming came in.
Mm-hmm.
Planes made mistakes and dropped bombs where they shouldn't. Some dentists at that hospital, right before I got there, they had gotten together and gone to, and had somebody, I don't know if a company or family or whatever, send them a boat that they put together.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big boat, because you remember we were on the ocean, although it was very rocky and hilly
mm-hmm.
going down. So they were putting together this boat and they had just finished and it was going to make its maiden voyage into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it leaning up against the dental clinic.
Mm-hmm.
It was more than a canoe, but it was not huge
mm-hmm.
boat, because it came through the mail.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they had incoming, and they hit that boat, and it became toothpicks. And it kind of took out the side of that building and knocked the dentist down and the patient out of the chair. And
uh-huh. I've heard a similar story. Did you serve with Jennifer Lundberg?
Not that I...
I've heard a similar story about some people getting a boat and it getting
yeah.
hit.
She could have been there when I was not there. Because this happened right before I came.
Okay.
So she could have been with that unit then. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's, That was classic. One day they had this patient, you know, the Vietnamese, when they came in, when they, the, our helicopters would pick them up and bring them in if they were hurt or injured or something, and sick. They were very sick because they had worms and malaria and all of that. So they were usually sick before they even got started. And so this they had an outhouse. They had a hooch that they could stay in, and they had this outhouse, and it was on this rocky incline down to the ocean, back by our emergency room. And our helicopters, the medical helicopters, would come in, and they'd swing around, and then they'd fly off. This was a field helicopter that came, a bigger one, that brought one of their buddies in. And when it swung around, it had a blast on it, and it knocked this outdoor John down over this hill, and this poor Vietnamese man was in it. And of course, besides what went all over him, he had a broken leg. But if anything happened, if there was a major hit somewhere, even if you'd worked 12 hours or something, when you heard those choppers coming in, people would go. They'd go and see what they could do. So it was a different thing. You don't find that in the States. People go home, they're with their family, you know, and they drive 25 miles to get there. But there, the only thing you had to do, you know, it's kind of boring. You didn't, you couldn't go to the store or down to the local cafe. There wasn't anything. They had a PX, and you could go get Coke or cigarettes or whatever. They didn't even really have a real club, one that the people had put together. One of the things that they did is that they were going to give us air conditioning. And so they, the, I don't think it was the Coast Guard, but the people that build things, came in, and it wasn't the Coast Guard, it's the other group. I can't remember the names right now. But they came in and they built concrete slabs outside our hooches. There were three or four double-story thing, buildings. And then they drilled holes from one end of this thing, so like 20 rooms, down to the other end. And that was for the ventilation system to go in. And then one day they brought these big cranes in, and they brought these huge air conditioners, and they set them down on these things. And the next day they came and picked them up and took them away. So we were left with a slab and holes. So we never got our air conditioner. We did have window air conditioners in the intensive care unit, but that's the only place, in the operating room, but that's all. And winter, it was like being in different countries. It's sort of like being in the United States, from Florida to Montana or something. In the winter time, or whatever their winter was in, say, around Saigon, the sun would shine, the earth would crack open, it would be hot, hot, hot. And then a storm would come up out of the blue. It would just pour torrential rain, and within an hour, the earth would be cracked open again in the heat and the sun. In Chulai, they had, I wrote a friend in saying, we have had 29 inches of rain this week, and it's cold. Now, cold was a relative term. It may have been 60 or 65, but with all that rain and no heat or anything, it was cold. It was damp. They issued us winter shirts to keep warm. And it didn't stop. It, for a whole month, it didn't stop. It rained and rained and rained. So, and one group that received my heartfelt thanks is Sears, Sears Roebuck. They had a catalog system, and you could order paint, you could order a toilet seat, you could order anything out of their catalog, and they would send it to you as quickly as they could. And so people would order paint to paint their room, or, you know, a bedspread or whatever. And of course, something from home. I remember one lady got, she went to the dining room and got some eggs. The dining room, it was a mess hall of the lowest order. went to the mess hall and got eggs, and her family had sent her some cheese that would keep en route. And she made scrambled eggs and cheese. That was the best food I had in 10 months in Vietnam. I mean, we were drooling. It was so good. Because they could ruin anything in their dining room. But it was... I never regretted having gone to Vietnam. I think I would have regretted had I not gone. It is not an experience. I don't really have any desire to go back. Many of my friends have been back. I don't. The lady that does my nails is Vietnamese and came out in 75 as things. Her husband had been a pilot, South Vietnamese pilot, so they had to leave. He was going to die. And she's been back several times and tells me they have cell phones. Everybody has a cell phone, and they don't have in their homes computers and internet, but they have them in these little shops that you can go into and use the computer and the internet everywhere. Every corner has one. But they still have many, many major problems.
Now, you were a little bit older than a lot of the nurses.
Yeah, well, I wasn't the oldest, but I had just been promoted to major when I went over there, which kind of set me aside in the first place. And I was 31 or 32 when I went over. And so a new graduate would be 22.
Yeah.
So I was about 10 years older than a new graduate, but anybody who was a captain or a major or so was my age, was up where
and
I
am. And was there a difference?
I think there's, I think the biggest difference in how you adjusted to having been there and seen people's legs and arms and heads blown off was not as much age as whether or not you stayed in the military. The people who got out of the military, because it was an unfriendly nation at that point in time, there wasn't anybody they could talk to. Women weren't that well recognized anyway. And I had a sergeant over there, a field guy, say one day, yeah, ma'am, well, you know, yeah, we have it tough out there, but, you know, we may go days and days and never see anybody hurt or injured or sick. You see it all day, every day. And I guess that's true. That's the only thing you see are the bad things. It's like being a policeman, and all you ever see is domestic violence. So you think everybody beats their wife. But my personal opinion, in knowing some friends that I had, and some of them were younger, but some of them weren't, and they got out of the service right away. I went to an American Nurses Association convention